You are listening to Street Roots Radio on X-Ray FM. I'm Hannah Francis. Street Roots Radio is a collaboration between X-Ray FM, KBU Radio, and local publication Street Roots. Street Roots is a nonprofit organization in Portland, Oregon that creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty by producing a newspaper and other media that are catalysts for individual and social change. Today, the article we are discussing is called Green Machine, a massive data center is the planned recipient of green energy generated by a $3.3 billion project long opposed by the Yakama Nation. I have with me Street Roots investigative reporter Henry Brennan, who wrote this article. Thank you so much for being here, Henry.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So first to start off, will you tell me about the Goldendale Energy Storage Project?
Yeah, for sure. So it's kind of the tech. It's basically a giant hydropower battery is like kind of the best way to understand it. The technical term is a closed loop pumped storage hydropower facility. But the short of what that is basically you have two reservoirs, one at the top of a giant bluff out in the Columbia River Gorge, the other on the bottom. And they're connected by a 29-foot diameter tube or pipe that is going to be tunneled into the mountain. And they'll drop about 2.3 billion gallons of water from the top reservoir to the bottom one. And all the force of that falling about 2,000 feet through this tunnel spins turbines or turbines and generates power. So that's kind of the rough gist of it. $3.3 billion, as you mentioned, and yeah.
Yeah, thank you. And so this project, like you mentioned in the title of this article, has been opposed by the Yakama Nation for a long time. Why are they opposed to it?
Yeah, why they're opposed to it is from time immemorial to the present, it's been a sacred site for the Yakama Nation. So for them, it's not just a bluff overlooking the river. It's called Pushpum, which means mother of all roots. And why they call it that is because it's basically a natural seed bank. High Country News has reported that there's almost three dozen different kinds of roots, flowers, shrubs. And folks at the Yakama Nation told me that some of them can only be found there. And so why that's important is, again, from forever until very, very recently and still, but obviously, kind of Euro-American infrastructure like dams has prevented this to an extent. But the Yakama Nation and other mid-Columbia tribes have long followed seasonal rounds where, members follow different foods through the seasons. And so roots like Indian celery are a key part of that. And some of the kind of first foods of the season or of the year, huckleberries and salmon are also parts of that. And so, not just is the site, a sacred food gathering site, but it's also important for, basically like religious thought. High Country News reported that the access to the area's views is, quote, critical for propagating the stories that form the architecture of regional indigenous thought. And I should say the views specifically. So you're up on this bluff in the Columbia River Gorge, about 3,000 feet up, and you're overlooking the gorge. You can see John Day Dam right in front of you. Then you can see the John Day River kind of emptying into the lake created by that piece of concrete. But then once you look kind of off into the distance, you can see on a clear day, the Three Sisters Mountains, you can see Mount Adams, Mount Rainier, Mount St. Helens. So it's really, it's quite the view.
Yeah, it sounds like a really special place, sacred to many.
Yeah, and I should say, like, obviously they don't want, this sacred site to have, a giant machine installed to bore a, 29-foot diameter, 2,000-foot plus deep tunnel into it, and then close off access completely to this site.
Yeah, no kidding. And when is this project slated to begin?
So basically, Right now, where the project stands is that last year, the Trump administration's energy agency granted this project a license to operate for 40 years. And that's one of the most important permitting steps that it faces, or that it kind of has ahead of it. So it basically got the big green light. Now, there's still plenty of steps that it faces. You know, these are smaller permits. And notably, it's also kind of tied up in court battles. And this project's nearly a decade old now, but it's still tied up in court battles with Columbia Riverkeeper and Yakima Nation, who are kind of the main people leading the fight against this. I should add, though, in addition to them, there's also groups like the Klamath tribes, who are facing a similar project down in southern Oregon, and kind of a buffet of environmental groups, as well as just regular people. But so that's kind of where the project stands right now, is it's tied up in kind of legal limbo.
Thank you. I also think that it's worth just sort of like talking about the fact that this is called a green project and that the article is titled Green Machine. And I think that this article is a really good example of how like green projects are not inherently good.
Yeah, of course. And I should mention, you know, I've kind of buried the lead here a little bit, is that this project, one of the things that Street Roots has, you know, confirmed, is that this project is affiliated with a massive data center project on the same site. And so yeah, that's kind of a key component of all this. You know, we've known about this pump storage project for, you know, the better part of a decade. But when I was there earlier this month for an event that the Yakima Nation was hosting, and people mentioned, you know, this is for a data center. And I'd seen speculation by energy industry people on previous stories I'd done about this, that it was for that. And so I decided to do, you know, a deep dive into that, and found that indeed, not only is it for a data center, but it's for a kind of green energy branded data center. And so basically what happened was, the company behind this project says that every time all that water's dumped down, it'll generate enough power to power about 500,000 homes for 12 hours. Now, I should point out, it actually takes more power to pump the water up than it generates when going down. And the idea behind that, which critics say that's kind of a questionable project just wholesale. But the idea behind that is kind of generally that it would provide power when power is most needed, and then, you know, pump it back up when it's less needed. Anyhow, so the project has kind of always emphasized, oh, this is for homes, and the region is in an energy crisis. You know, power demand is expected to double, or nearly double, in the next 20 years before gains from efficiency and conservation are included. And that's from the Northwest Power and Conservation Council. But basically, a lot of that is from data centers. And so when folks told me that this was for a data center, I figured I would check into that. And indeed, Northwest Public Broadcasting reported earlier this month that there is a proposed data center on the site at the bottom of the bluff. And it said, you know, it's unclear if these two projects are connected. And so I looked at the state ecology documents, Washington Department of Ecology, and there it is, Stack Infrastructure proposing a data center. And so I thought, you know, I wonder who owns all this, because previously the company behind this project, Rye Development, the lead for the project, told me, quote, "This is a piece of private land that's been industrialized for quite some time and is owned by a landowner who's requested this type of development." So I went into kind of property records lookup tools, and I found this LLC called NSC Smelter. And then under corporate officer, you can see this gentleman, Scott Tillman. And when you look him up on LinkedIn, you discover that indeed both projects are going forward and they are related. And so he describes working on the pump storage project. But basically, his LinkedIn reads, "In collaboration with Copenhagen Infrastructure Partners and Rye Development to develop a 12,000 megawatt closed loop pumped hydro storage facility and this is kind of the kicker here, and Blue Owl Digital Infrastructure and Stack Infrastructure to develop the world's greenest 1 gigawatt plus hyperscale data center. And so it's basically all right there that this is, seemingly intended for, a quote green hyperscale data center. So yeah, this is definitely a part of the kind of green revolution of that's been kind of called green colonialism or greenwashing or all of these things that's really, redoing the harms that the original hydropower system inflicted upon Native nations like the Yakima Nation when it drowned sites like Slilo Falls, which had been, the longest continually inhabited site in North America before the Dalles Dam flooded it.
Yeah, and that is a really heartbreaking story. And you mentioned that some of the people in these communities were moved directly themselves and their families. In World War II, they were kind of like corralled and then moved with the Slilo Falls project. And now they're
Yeah.
being impacted for a third time by another energy project. If you would give me a little bit of background to fill in that story, that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, like you just said, the Yakima Nation and other mid-Columbia tribes have been, dramatically impacted by this stuff. One of my sources, Elaine Harvey, her great grandmother is actually buried under the Columbia. The cemetery was flooded. And Elaine, personally, her family has been displaced by the hydro system and dams twice. This is her direct family flooded out of the areas they were living and removed. She now is a conservation scientist and is a key part of the coalition fighting this. But we were standing on this site, Friday earlier this month, and she basically, she had described and members of her band of the Yakima Nation described this long history, from time immemorial up till very recently, when kind of Euro-American settler colonialism and the infrastructure that's gone with that impacted them. And she said, pretty striking thing. She's like, I think about the first encounter, I think about Lewis and Clark. And then she proceeded to name off all these different types of kind of Euro-American infrastructure that have impacted them. And so, you have the railroads being built through that area, then you have the highways. You have the hydro system, which reporting from OPB, Salmon Wars series found was actually done knowingly and intentionally with the intention of hurting Native people and cutting them off from salmon. Of course, in the Upper Columbia, that's a particularly big issue where those dams are not passable. Chief Joseph and Grand Coulee, and the New Deal had pretty disastrous impacts on Native nations. But then it's not simply that. It's also, agricultural regimes that were kind of built from diverted water. And then, when you stand on that site, you can see so much of this. You can see John Day Dam just below you. You can see, endless farms, wheat farms in Oregon from this. But you can also see the kind of ruins of the Columbia Gorge aluminum smelter. And that smelter was actually operated by, kind of one of Lockheed Martin's predecessor companies that has a name that's escaping me, but is related to it. And they were making aluminum for that weapons company for a long time, and now it's a contaminated site with all sorts of pollution. And then kind of even beyond that, you can see this kind of most recent wave of kind of impacts from energy infrastructure, where you see, all of these wind turbines kind of dotting into the distance. And I should mention that the site actually is already surrounded by a wind project that, up until very recently, prevented the Yakima Nation people from accessing any part of the area. I should say the developer, the current owners of that, said that that wasn't true. However, they only just bought it this year and granted them access. And I was on the site, and it's fenced off, and it's energy infrastructure. So I certainly wouldn't want to be caught, trespassing on that. So you just have basically this time, this long stretch of history, where the systems in the Columbia River Basin functioned one way, and then in pretty much the blink of an eye, Euro-American infrastructure has pretty much completely transformed the Columbia River Basin and the river, as well as, or a great expense of ecology, but also of the Aquanation and others, whether it's their sacred sites, their village sites, cemeteries, traditional foods, or kind of spiritual practices.
Thank you for that context. I think it's really important. And so, coming back to like this whole project and how this project lays in that context, it's kind of inconceivable to think about how this project is being built on native land and being opposed by the Acoma Nation, and it takes more energy than it actually produces to function, and then that energy that it's going to produce is not even going to go to the homes that are around it, but is going to be going towards a data center, which will still be net pulling more energy.
It's it's hard to say. I should say, we don't the data center plans are so early because it's flown under the radar. I talk to people familiar with the thinking of Mr. Tillman, and these projects are certainly related, but if one of them happens and the other doesn't, he still gets a payday. And as the landowner, of course, seeking to sell these lands. So I think, and so we don't know the scale of how much power the data center will draw. What we do know is that data centers have just exploded in the region, and they use, immense volumes of power, and it's pretty much completely torpedoed Oregon and Washington's climate goals. Kind of in addition to torpedoing those goals, it puts a real strain on the grid, like you mentioned. I mean, the problem really for the grid is that in the dead of winter and the heart of summer, heating and cooling on those hottest and coldest days put real strain on the grid. And so, to be able to have firm power at those periods, energy planners tell me is really key. And so when you have things like this that are really taking, kind of adding a larger, what they call base load to the grid, it really does, kind of reduce its capacity. And so, in theory, a project like this that functions like a big battery stands to partly help with that, in that it can release the power at the time when it's most needed. But again, the economics of the project at large have been called into question. And I mean, on a broader level, the FERC license is for 40 years. And I asked the lead developer of this guy, Eric Steinle, does it make sense to destroy, the site that's been important to people here since forever, for 40 years of power? And he basically said, well, maybe it'll last longer, and we don't build where we haven't been invited, and pointed out, that it's going to power homes and things like that. Of course, since then, since him and I last talked, and I should mention, I reached out to him, and all other companies involved for this story, and did not get very specific responses, none from him. Obviously the data center component to this is new. And so, we'll see what happens. If it is built, I think it's kind of the worst fear of a lot of people that I talk to at this event, where folks are really working to fight it. And
Yeah. Can you tell me more about how folks are working to fight it and like what this event was like?
I think that's a really important part of this. I mean, the event was I think anybody would describe it as powerful. It basically drew hundreds of people from around the region to talk about why the site is important. And I would encourage really anybody interested in this topic to read High Country News's reporting on this. A couple of their reporters have taken this on, notably B. Toasty Oster, who's done some really fantastic stories about this site and the broader position that Native nations in the basin are in, where you don't want to reveal your sacred sites and open them up to looting and pillaging, but to protect it from this type of project, you are put in a position where you kind of have to. But this event, it took people to the site, and there's a ton of folks there. In addition to the people I mentioned previously, we talked to members of the Klamath tribes, who talked about fighting, a very similar project in Swan Lake that also stands to destroy a religious site there. And yeah, folks basically just explained like this is why it's important to us. This is the role of this site within our kind of ways of life, our diets, our identity, and to some extent our spiritual practices. Some of those details are still private. And then, kind of the highlight of the whole event, or kind of the focus, I should say, was an attorney from Columbia Riverkeeper briefed everybody on the fight. And that fight, I think, is the focus of really all of this. There's been documentaries. There's one called These Sacred Hills about this. But basically, it's lawfare right now. These groups are really seeking to gum up the project, delay it, fight it any way they can because of the harm it stands to very, very permanently inflict. And so, members of the Yakama Nation talked about, asking people to send postcards to Washington Governor Ferguson. And you can kind of find more about that out on their website, on the Yakama Nation's website, with that documentary, These Sacred Hills, and in the Street Roots story about this as well.
Where can folks get a copy of Street Roots?
Yeah, that's a great question. People can go to Street Roots' website, streetroots.org/vendors/. And if you scroll down a little bit, you can see all the areas that vendors are right now. Yeah, it also will actually tell you when they're there too, what times, what days, and the person's name. So that's a great way to find it. And you can also, of course, always find these stories online. But always better to read the print media, especially when purchased from a vendor. So, check it out.
For X-Ray FM, I'm Hannah Francis.